Interview excerpt from storyteller Flossie, the biography program bringing me back to who I am. We tend to pin a lot of importance to what we do. We get so busy that we forget about who we are. This sort of brought me back to who I am, refocusing on life and people around me instead of on tasks. I poem excerpt from volunteer biographer Greg, facilitating conversation. I tend to not be terribly pushy, so I just accept what story they want to tell me. I will push a little bit further for the more personal, emotional responses. I think it's very patchy as to how they respond. Some just don't want to. That's certainly not unique to women or men or to older or younger. I think it's just an individual personality trait. I don't think we're there to produce an earth-shatteringly good biography. I think we're there to facilitate a conversation that they might be having with themselves or with whomever they think they're writing the biography for. I poem excerpt from storyteller Dorothy, Diagnosis. I'm stage 4 in my disease. I am terminal. We can't cure the type of cancer I've got. My quality of life at the moment and for 4 years has been really good, so knowing that I've probably got a maximum of 4 years left now, I wanted to get the story down. I probably wouldn't have been prompted to do it except that I've now got my end date in sight. So once it was mentioned, it was definitely something I wanted to do. Interview excerpt from Carer Patricia, the biography program as spiritual connection. What I think is good about it is that there are a number of different services that EPC offer, but this one's quite different. This one's more of a spiritual one, probably, whereas the other ones might be more practical services, but this is definitely to me more an emotional, spiritual connection. They're learning about the person more. And all of the carers were lovely. I have nothing but good thoughts about what EPC did, but they didn't have the connection. Mum felt like Christine was her friend. She felt like she sort of made a connection with this person. I think that's what's so special about it. Interview excerpt from carer Mark. A difficult death. I got a phone call at 4 o'clock in the morning. I raced into the hospital and I'll always remember the words of the relieving surgeon, the specialist. She said, "Mark, we're doing the best we can." I nearly leapt across the table and said, "I've been looking after her for 6 months and you're telling me this is the best." Well, she backed off and I went inside to talk to her and basically rewrote how her medications should be administered. Interview excerpt from volunteer biographer Lauren, Stories of Illness. Very few people that I've done have actually spoken about the illness as, "This is the illness now and I'm going to die from it." They will talk about past illnesses and how things have affected them. The woman that I've just been transcribing for, she was very open. "This is what I've got at the moment. I went through treatment and now I've decided to stop everything. She was very forthcoming and has included quite a large part in her biography on that. Interview excerpt from staff member Lucy, Listening. It's a real gift, actually. I mean, I think you can see it when someone who's empathetic and, you know, we obviously recruit people well, but, you know, listening to someone like Paige or having Paige listen to you, she actually makes you feel important. And just by active listening, so that's an important part of it, I think. Interview excerpt from volunteer biographer Bernard, How We Speak. I tend to write the words almost exactly as they're spoken. Now, look, I take out the ums and the ers and the occasional swear word. I leave the swear words in sometimes. iPoem excerpt from Storyteller Steve, version 2. I've recorded so much of it, I find it very interesting. My wife Jenny, she doesn't like Family Tree. I like it, but she doesn't. So we agree to disagree on that. iPoem excerpt from Storyteller Chris, what it means to tell my story. I was a bit depressed and the nurses and the counsellor was coming out to see me. I was down in the dumps a little bit. They had this biography program if I would like to participate in it. I was already in the process of getting documentation together myself to try and put something together for my wife, my kids, my grandkids, about my life, but was running into a brick wall, not knowing how to go about it. So when this opportunity came up, it was really great. I agreed to do it. I had a very good volunteer. He put extra things in which I didn't expect, which he researched himself, which was absolutely marvellous. And I came out of it at the other end feeling a whole lot brighter, better for the whole experience. I didn't know what to expect. It was above my expectations, the final document. They gave me two copies and I'm trying to get them back from my two daughters because they're still going through it and reading it. And then even my eldest granddaughter picked it up a few weeks ago, so it's achieved that purpose. I enjoyed it. We had a couple of laughs about different things that I'd regretted in my life, which to me was great. I'd always had a couple of those things bothered me. But then when you talk to someone, and especially a stranger, you go over it and then have a good laugh about it, which was surprising to me. I think that not knowing the volunteer, you're able to discuss things candidly. I found it an easy process to work through. Some things in my life that's happened, I've never spoken to my family about until this process started up. I found it easy to talk to the volunteer through these. And then I found it easier to sit down with my family and say, this happened and that happened. I'm not the most open person, as my wife would tell you. I think that surprised her a little bit in this whole process. Poem excerpt from volunteer biographer Greg, facilitating the biography program process. My biggest fear, let me tell you, coming out of training and before I did my first biography, my biggest fear was that it would be awkward. I'd set myself up and turn the tape recorder on and then I'd have to think up 1,000 questions to get them going. I don't think it's been the experience with any of them. They all prepare themselves, and in fact, often before I, literally before I turned the voice recorder on, I've got to say, stop, stop, stop. Just turn this on, and now can you go? I think they've all thought about it. It's not a difficult process at all. I try not to limit them. I'm told that we should sort of aim for 6 to 8 visits. I just conveniently forget to tell them about that. I tell them when I think I've reached my limits for a given week and stop at that. But the rest of it, it's open-ended in my view. I think most of my biographies I've done have ended up more than 50 pages. I think the longest one was about 130, 140. I don't limit them. Interview excerpt from volunteer biographer Kevin. Why volunteer? Well, it was about 6 to 7 years ago, I'd estimate. I was listening to ABC one Saturday morning and Paige was being interviewed and mentioned the biography program, and I thought it was a good idea. And she said, we're looking for biographers. And I thought, well, I can write, I can listen. I think I might be all right at this. So I rang her up and came in for an interview and did the 6-week course and they let me loose. Interview excerpt from volunteer biographer Bernard, the storyteller's voice. I have 1,000 funny stories. I think the spoken word written down comes across much better, and a lot of it's conversational, you know, so they'll tell you about an incident in their life. There'll be a series of conversations between 2 or 3 people. So I said, he said to the guy, I want to do this, and then he said, no, I want to do that, no, I don't want to, And that conversational form is just very, very attention grabbing. And people don't want to turn the page for these conversations. In fact, even when it's not a conversation, I'll turn it into a conversation sometimes just to make it more interesting. But in writing in verbatim, I've had two reactions, which are really rather funny. A number of the people I've written are migrants. It's very rare that I don't get a migrant. Australia is an immigrant country. And I had one lady who, you know, her English is quite good, but, you know, she did have a typical East European migrant type, you know, singulars with plurals and plurals with singulars, and didn't understand tenses or verbs. So it was all, I said, and then they said. So I did it verbatim. I handed it over after a couple of weeks of transcripts. I gave them the transcripts to read. She gave it to her daughter to read, who, when I went to make the third weep, absolutely bailed me up in the corner. And she said, "You'll make my mother sound like an idiot. You make her talk like this." And I said, "Well, that's the way she talks." And she said, "No, you've got to rewrite it. You've got to write it in proper English." And anyway, the lady, Anna, said, "Hey, it's my story. I told it like that. I want it written like that." And so that was a bit of source of conflict. And the other story, the 95-year-old lady in bed, well, her daughter sat on either side of the bed and basically prompted everything she said. So one would say, "You remember we had that beach house?" "Yes, yes." "You know, they had this dining room," and, you know, they'd sort of prompted almost everything. "What was that neighbour called?" "Don't know." "Oh, Mrs. Smith." "Yes, Mrs. Smith." At the end, when I delivered it, they read it and they said, "Oh, this is brilliant, Bernard. I can really hear my mother's voice coming through here." And they'd been doing all the talking, which was rather funny. So I think people do like to have the client's voice, little idioms that they use. They like to see it down on paper. And often they'll say, "Yeah, that's just the sort of thing he said." I poem excerpt from Cara Diane, version 2. I thought it was good. It was an outlet. It was something different. I think he felt relief that the grandchildren were going to be able to know what life was like when he grew up. They poem excerpt from Cara Diane, version 2. It was good for him to be able to put it down. He wanted to leave this legacy, which he did. He felt relief that he was able to sit down, that the grandchildren were going to be able to know what life was like when he grew up. Something he'd sort of look forward to. I poem, Diane, carer to her husband, William. I'll just go back to William's experience. I think he found it really good. I thought it was good. It was an outlet. It was something different. I think he felt relief that the grandchildren were going to be able to go through this book and know what life was like when he grew up. I can't even think of the lady who did it, whether she came in with topics. I don't know whether that happened or whether William, he probably had a rough draft in his own head as to where it should all go. I suppose if I wanted to clarify something, I would get straight back to it. I know William's brothers have got copies. I brought the book just in case you're curious to have a look. I was working on this prior to him passing away. He wanted these photos in. I put it into a book form. I do genealogy. There are so many questions you'd love to ask your grandparents when they passed on. I suppose we didn't really know what to expect initially. I didn't have any expectations. I just let that all unfold. I think William probably did too. I don't think it was that tiring for him. I think he saw it as a positive. He had off days, but I think he really looked forward to that. It happened in the kitchen because they needed a table. I could hear what was going on. I'd just listen to them talking and I'd just pop in and out. I think he was pleased to be able to get all that sort of documented. I think even his brothers found it interesting. I know in discussions with my own cousins and things, we've all got different perspectives. I was the oldest, the younger ones have different memories. I think he was glad to be able to put it down. As a result of William putting that together, I look back on my childhood. I think one of your questions was about a biography for the spouse, and I thought, yeah, it'd be good to do it, but I haven't actually sat down. I know that's costly because really you're there for the patient. I understand all that. I know that there have been other people in my life who lived out our way who have lost a partner. And when their partners were sick, I'd be saying, get in touch with Eastern Palliative Care. I'd say, William put this biography together. There's massages, you can do artwork if you want, all that sort of thing. I sort of tried to promote it a little bit. Whether they took it up, I don't know. I know a lot of people out there, no, we'll be right, that sort of thing. I knew with William, we were going to be all right, you know. I would have expected it to go a little bit longer. I had no preconceptions. I really couldn't put a negative on it, really. I was really pleased with the way it all went. I thought it was a really good process at that stage. But then, I'm not one for really delving deep. It provided something and I thought it was beneficial. I thought it was really good. I gave them to the children. They poem, Carer, Diane. William, he, him. He found it really good. But what he thought was lacking was the people who were qualified in report writing. He felt he was constantly correcting. It was an outlet. It was something different, certainly nothing we would have expected from all the support that he got. It was good for him to be able to put it down. He wanted to leave this legacy for the children, which he did. He felt relief that the grandchildren were going to be able to know what life was like when he grew up. He'd look forward to the visit. William, in his own mind, he probably had a rough draft in his own head as to where it should all go. He looked forward to his visits. He passed away 5 years ago, so, and pretty well 5 years from the date he was diagnosed, he just missed by a few days. William's brothers have both got copies. He was told he could put in as many photos as he'd like, and then she said we couldn't do it. He wanted photos, so I put it into a book form. He only got it a few weeks before he passed away. He saw it as a positive. He enjoyed that meeting up and he was really good up probably until a month before he passed away. So he was able to keep up with everything else that was going on. He had off days, but he looked forward to that. He often goes back to his grandfather on his maternal side. He had a lot of respect for him. And they had a lot of fun together. He was pleased to be able to get that all sort of documented down. His brothers, going through the book, found it interesting because they all have different memories of this particular grandfather. He was glad to be able to put it down. These were William's thoughts. He had a lot of those thoughts beforehand. They were just his experiences as to how he saw life going back. He was monitoring it, I suppose, session by session. He just put it down on paper, just to let them know how proud he was of them all. He was a great grandfather. He was always on the floor with them outside playing, sporting things. He just enjoyed them. I poem excerpt from storyteller Peggy, Friendship. Made me realise that I had a much fuller life than what I actually thought. In my case, I was involved in a number of different organisations, and so it made me think about the friendships I'd had through the years. Interview excerpt from volunteer biographer Bernard, Storyteller Transformation. These people are pretty sick. They're sick enough to be suffering. By and large, they're confined to a wheelchair or to a bed or whatever. So they're pretty sick. And you're entering into their lives. and you're confronting an 80-year-old very sick person. In any other situation, that's the person you're going to deal with. But in this biography process, you do get to take them back to when they were young and fit and healthy and life was an adventure. And it doesn't take them long to go back to that world. They don't want to be in the world they're in now. And unfortunately, everything about their life confines them in that world. So if the nurse comes in, she's visiting a sick person. The doctor comes in if they've got to go to hospital. Now this takes them out of that world. And I've seen this. This transporting to another world is tremendously therapeutic. If you want me to tell stories, I could tell stories forever about it. But I'll only tell one about how therapeutic these processes are and how much, after a couple of weeks, people say, "Oh, I'm really looking forward to this. What are we talking about today?" You know, they don't want to be in a wheelchair. They don't want to be in bed. They want to be back when they were young. The very first biography I did was a 95-year-old lady with heart failure. I knocked on the door. She had daughters who were in their 60s. They were her carers. And I walked in to go into the front room and they said, "Oh, no, no, she's in bed." And so there was this double bed with this head at the top and a blanket right up to the chin. And this lady was there. And the first recording I did, I really didn't think we'd get to the end of that recording, let alone the end of the biography. She had a tiny little voice. She hardly said anything. It was absolutely pitiful. And I thought, well, you know, this is going to be very difficult. Anyway, I transcribed and went back the next day. I found she was sitting up in bed. And in the first week, the recorder, I could hardly hear what she had to say, but I could record. The third week, she was sitting up in bed with a nice new nightie on and she'd made herself up. She's 95. She's made herself up. Anyway, cut to the chase. After about 5 or 6 weeks, the biography was finished. I delivered it to the daughter, rang the doorbell, knocked on the door and turned right into the bedroom and the bed was empty. I thought, oh no, you know, I'm late. She died. Because I'd assumed she'd going to die any minute. This was my first biography. My face dropped. And then from the kitchen came this woman saying, "I'm in here. I'm making you a cup of tea. True story." And so, yes, I really think the process of, you know, 6 weeks really helped her to, you know, get on her feet, so to speak. I think it invariably happens that people are a lot brighter at the end of the process than they were at the start.